You're listening to Supervision with a Vision, where we discuss all things supervision. I'm your host, Sarah, professional counselor, marriage and family therapist, play therapist, eating disorder specialist, and cookie lover, with my co-host, Heather, marriage and family therapist, certified Together in Texas counselor, a Texas transplant from California, and outdoor adventurer. Hi, welcome to Supervision with a Vision. Today, Heather and I are talking about what it means to practice as a counselor. This week, we read Psychology Today's article, Explaining to Adolescents the Power of Practice, published in 2023. Heather, within the article, it talks about a couple of different parts of practicing as a counselor. First, that practice can be boring sometimes.
Yeah, I think that it's true, right? If you're trying to master a skill or trying to get better at something, repetition can be helpful, but it can also be just very non-exciting and very boring.
The very first thing that comes to mind when I say that is sitting at the piano when I was little, trying to practice piano.
Just over and over.
It was not fun. I mean, I think it maybe could have been. It does make me wonder, how do some kids get really good at practicing something like that?
Right.
What are your thoughts? How does someone push through that practice can be boring to get to the point where they're really good at something?
Right. So I think self-reflection in that is so important. So even, especially if you're feeling bored or stuck, you feel like you're not making progress, to be able to look back, if you've been practicing a skill for a week and you look back and go, okay, well, when I did it the first time, it was uncomfortable. Or then I did it the second. When did it get boring? That's a reflection point. And then now that you're bored, have you really increased your skills?
Okay. Thinking about this analogy with practicing piano. So that means if you're trying to learn to play piano and you can get to a point where, I learned a little song.
Right. You learned
and
something.
It feels like you, look, I have fruit from my practice. Okay. So I think that to me also means a really savvy teacher,
right?
Who can set you up for that kind of success milestone. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to do that as a supervisor?
I think there are tweaks you can make. It's on whether you're supervisee bites, right? Because there's fun things you can do in supervision to not make it so boring with paperwork, it's boring, but we need to make these corrections or we can do this. A lot of times at the very beginning when I'm reading my supervisee's notes, I mean, they're just too wordy and bad. And they're trying so hard to exactly write specific things. And so I tried to give comical feedback that makes them stop and reset. I tried to also make it so we're not just doing the same thing about their paperwork every time, giving them different points.
Again, the piano example.
Right.
If you're practicing the exact same scale over and over and over, it doesn't keep your brain as engaged as practicing something slightly different. So you're saying in supervision, there might be time where you focus on improving on notes, but you don't spend the entire session every single week until the note is perfect.
Right.
Okay. And there within counseling, there are so many different parts that you could practice.
Right.
That's really applicable.
Right.
I like the idea of reflecting back and noticing change. I think that could be a little challenging in counseling because we're not in a session with our clients, with our supervisors. And they might not notice change as easily because they're in the moment and they're doing it. Maybe I can imagine for myself feeling I've gotten through an initial session with someone or an intake and I feel more confident.
Right. You start to grow a little bit. You start to go, okay, now I have a baseline of what I can do.
Or maybe in leading a group that I realize, that felt easier. I felt like I managed the group a little bit better time-wise or managing the interaction between people that feels I got better at that. Or I can see myself improving. What about you we've talked about you as the supervisor helping a supervisee to see this, but do you do this now with yourself where you can see we're still practicing as counselors and as supervisors. Do you reflect back and or do you maybe sometimes get bored within the practice of being a counselor or supervisor?
I think sometimes I can get bored. I've noticed this for myself. If I have too many of the same type client or clients that are dealing with similar issues, I get like restless because it's almost like my brain is like, didn't we already have this conversation? No, that was a different client, you know, and like you get kind of in that rut.
Yeah.
So I try purposely to not book like clients on the same day.
Oh, does that get challenging sometimes?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine it's been a long time, but I know that you've had experience like this before. It's been a long time since I've worked in a place where there was a manual or something like a manual. Right. Man, I can get really bored really quickly if every group or every hour of my day is manualized.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I know I get really excited and think it's fun to think up new ways to offer the same topic.
Right.
So maybe maybe we are doing mindfulness. Maybe this hour of the day is a group called mindfulness, that coming up with a new way to present that can be fun and fun for the group, but also fun for me to think up a new way
to do it.
Think about that.
Yeah.
But did you feel that way using manualized groups?
Yeah. Whenever you have that where it's already pre-scheduled and you're like, hey, now I've got to do this kind of group. You're like, really? Mm-hmm. Do we have to?
Mm-hmm.
But challenging myself to do something different, or also be thinking about it from the client's point of view. Well, they don't want to sit and fill out a worksheet. Like they want to do something different.
Right. Oh man. I don't know when the last time I had to do that was, but that when you get to that, this is the week two worksheet.
Right.
Like, but even then I think you can inject yourself into that or use the worksheet, but add something to it or change what you ask them to do with the worksheet that
can
change it up.
Real brave in that job that had those type of things. I was like, and you can take the worksheet home to look at later. Yeah. gave it.
And you could fold this up and wedge it under the table so the table doesn't wobble.
Right. So you just get, at some point you're like, this was a good outline of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But
I think this happens to counselors when they have practiced for a long time.
Sure.
And they just don't feel energized by what they're doing anymore.
Right. It's like kind of the precursor to burnout. Like if you're already feeling this way, well, look out.
Okay. So it could be a sign of lots of different things, but there are ways where you can energize yourself or inject some enthusiasm back into what you're doing. Okay. So practicing as a counselor is not just for new young counselors, but it's also for counselors that have been doing it for a long time, and it happens to everybody, and there's something we can do about it.
Right.
Okay. Practice. The next point in the article is that practice is a life skill.
Right. I think that's where you're going with that, is it's not just a counseling skill, but also like it continues to happen as you progress in your practice, you're going to use those techniques and those skills in other ways. And so it's like, you're not, I find myself often like, okay, something came up in a session and like, you know, 3 months later, I'm like, oh, that sounds familiar. And it could be something completely not related.
Uh-huh.
But it's like when you start mending those things together, you are practicing the same skills, maybe in a different context.
Well, I've been thinking about, I'm working on a project right now where I'm thinking about learning objectives a lot. And I think, that's a higher level of learning,
right?
That you are synthesizing. So you haven't just memorized it or you know how do I define it or identify it, but now you're synthesizing it and including it in other things that you're doing.
Right.
I don't think that we do. I think that's why we do this and the other things that we do. But do you think that some supervisors get to a point where they think, I'm done. I know this, or I've practiced this, or I know how to manage this. And so they're not still expecting themselves to learn or change or grow.
Right. I think that happens often, actually. I think people hit a point where they just think like, oh, well, this is how it is.
Yeah.
This is what.
Or like, oh, good. I checked that box.
Mm-hmm. Moving on and not reverting back.
Wow. I'm also thinking a lot about, I need to get some continuing education hours done in the next couple of months. And so I've been thinking about
what do you want to do?
Yeah. That makes me think about our ethics requirement.
Mm-hmm.
We're required to do ethics every single renewal cycle, every time we renew our license. And if we every time thought, oh, I've done that, I already know that, then we wouldn't get anything more out of it.
Right.
But we are expected to refresh that and do that every single time.
It could get boring.
Definitely.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I think Yeah, ethics at the ethics is, continuing education is oft could often be
Right.
boring, but challenging ourselves to think about it in a new way
Right.
and still getting something out of it every
Yeah.
time. I don't know. Do you? I maybe it's optimistic of me. I'd like to think that counselors are lifelong learners.
Yes, that sounds very optimistic. I would say, I'll reframe it a little bit. I'm using the word good. I don't know what that really means, but like good counselors or, invest in lifelong learning.
What about invested counselors or lifelong,
Like it.
people that are pushing themselves, that invest in themselves or the profession, they continue to learn and get something out of it. The opposite, what if you're not practicing?
Oh, yeah. I
What does
mean,
that look like? What does a counselor who stops learning, stops practicing, what does that look like in their day to day?
for me, that would be boring. So that's the first word that comes to mind. Even though practice can be boring, that would be boring. I think also like the lack of growth, like I would feel very disconnected. And I mean, could you go on for a while and in counseling doing that? I mean, maybe, but at some point in time, it seems like it would take a toll on everything, like on you being successful as a counselor and then being able to help other people. Like it seems like at some point it just would stop.
So
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And so used to having everything in front of them right away that we forget that innovation just takes time. I get frustrated too. Why? And you know, this is being one of my best friends is, hey, I talk to you all the time. Hey man, I'm frustrated in the fact that I can't seem to just get there in the next day. But that's just not how these things work, right? Innovation needs to be planned out. It needs to be very methodical. And then when it finally hits, that's when it seems like to everyone else that it sort of just came out of nowhere. But to you know the amount of dedication that it took over that time.
A lot of different areas of that counselor would become stagnant. May like they would be stagnant. Their clients would get to a point where they were stagnant. They wouldn't, the clients themselves wouldn't see any more change or growth. The counselors' business, whether they're in private practice or not, that would become stagnant. It
Right.
just
You're not going to
doesn't
have new clients
change.
coming in if they don't, you're not going to have clients staying very long if they're not getting what they need.
And if it makes me think, those are the kinds of, you go to the counselor's website and it looks like nothing's changed on the website in
You're stuck
10
still.
years or
You're like,
something.
oh, update that.
That they're still doing the same thing over and over. The next point in our article is practicing something new can feel weird.
Sure. I mean, for me it's always weird, right? Something new is always weird. Like anxiety about doing a new type of therapy or like learning something new because you don't feel like you've mastered it. You don't feel, and so you're like, I hope I'm doing this right. Like I hope I'm understanding this right. And part of it's just trusting your gut and going forward with like
I'm trying to think of things that I've practiced that were new that felt weird. Like, I don't know. I mean, okay, how about even learning to write
Oh yeah,
when you're
that's a great
little? Like
example. The
holding a
pencil.
pencil the first time. Those, I think they're cute, but the chubby crayons that are intended for little hands, and so they don't actually, they're not small. They're not meant for you to hold it the way you would hold a pencil or a
Grip.
pen. That ch gradually changing that and knowing where to put your fingers and
That's a great example.
that at first that feels funny, and you do, and little kids do just grab it versus holding it in the position to write, that change feels funny. I this makes me think of having conversations with counselors that I've known for a while, and they say things, maybe we both or one of us comes across a new technique or a new
Oh yeah.
idea, and one of us goes, I don't know, that
Nope.
newfangled idea, I don't know about that. But so many of the modalities that we use were that at some
Of
point.
course, they were always on the new cusp of something.
And like, can you, I mean, in the 80s when EMDR was developed, can you imagine the first time someone said, I'm going to do this thing
And it
called
works,
EMDR?
right?
And I promise it works. It's so amazing that probably everybody in the room looked at them like,
Yeah.
Did you just grow a second head?
Right.
You're going to do what?
Right.
And you think what's going to happen?
Right.
Can you think of others that you, like from that perspective, that if you looked at it from the very first time it was introduced to you, that you would have thought, what?
Yeah.
Why would we do that?
I actually think so many things in like mental health have experienced that. And I'm having a hard time searching for exactly, but I have an example of when there was an intake form at an agency I worked at for couples that would mm-hmm, come in mm-hmm. and like they had like this like set list of questions. And as an intern, I just, here's your paper, fill mm-hmm, this out. Mm-hmm, here. Mm-hmm. Well, recently a colleague of mine sent me a copy of one. She's like, we were cleaning out the cabinets. Look what we found. And like, none of those questions would be questions I ask now. And currently in practice, like, oh, that was a big shift. But I'm sure at the time it was really important to know how many minutes a week do you spend with your spouse? Like, like it was like some very funny like, so I think those type things get like, when we were first doing it, people were like, what? Why are you asking those?
Yeah.
I mean, I think of Gottman and his experiments.
Yes.
Like how he tested everything, which is great evidence that, of how our, you know, couples interact with each other. But at the same time, I mean, I would have been like, hey, no.
Right. Well, and not that we even stuck with all of those ideas, but imagine, you know, Freud, come lay down on my couch.
Lay down.
No, just lay down.
Lay down.
Just the
lay down.
And also don't look at me.
Right.
Don't look. Don't
no contact.
Or even the shift out of that.
Right.
Like, oh, no, no, we're not going to lay down this time.
Right.
What?
Or like the relationship that you have with your counselor is reflective on your relationship. Like,
yes.
Like working through it. Can you imagine trying to explain that to somebody? Like, no, now we're going to have a relationship.
And right.
You are going to be able to.
I think they would look at you like, should we hold hands?
Right.
I don't know what we should do now if we're in a relationship.
Right. I had a professor when I was in grad school explain, I don't remember exactly what, he was explaining group dynamics and stuff. And he said, you know, in the 70s, it was in a hot tub and the counselor was invited over to a bunch of neighbors' houses and this is how it started. And I was like, ew, like, and he was serious.
Yeah, right, like, right.
This is something.
When the first time you see it, your group for counseling and everybody gets in the hot tub.
No.
Well, I mean, I'd be thinking, ew, don't touch my feet.
Right,
no
please,
one touch
no
my
one
feet.
No one touch anything.
Right. No one touch anything. Right. But there would be so many practicing something new could feel really weird.
Right.
Okay. What if, and maybe, I mean, none of us are going to get back in the hot tub, hopefully.
Right.
I don't think we're headed that way. But if we're talking about asking our supervisees to do something and practice something that is new, so it's going to feel weird. How do we help them? How do we help facilitate that knowing we know it's going to feel weird to
you? It doesn't feel right. And this is something you're just going to have to keep. I think one, just be supportive and open, right? Like they're going to resist and they're not going to be feeling confident. And if they're not confident, they're not going to want to do it. That whole cycle.
I think recently with my little group I have a group where I meet as a group every once in a while with supervisees. And I've been individually, I had this conversation with each one of them. And then as a group, we've had this conversation that I want to help them push towards realizing their emotions related to their clients.
Absolutely.
And that I thought specifically this group wasn't doing that a whole lot, but that feels so weird to them.
To them.
And the reason I spoke to them individually first was that I said, I see that this is something that you could work on. Mm-hmm. How would it feel to you to work on this individually? And do you feel like you could work on it with the group? Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to all of them that they all said, we feel like our group is strong enough that we could do this together. So they wanted to. But I do, with intention, ask them sometimes to stop and let's just all focus on how are we reacting to that? What are your emotions?
What are your emotions?
And expressing it and saying it out loud to each other. But it does feel weird to them. They all make this face like, ugh, deer in headlights.
Right.
How do I do this? So it feels weird to them.
And there's so much now that they do. I mean, with all the shifts in learning, like we go to a lot of like online learning platforms. Mm-hmm. A lot of our supervisees are coming out of school with like most of their education was online.
Right. And most of their practical experience.
Right. I mean, so it's like a lot. It's very different. But asking them to engage in that way is probably like another barrier to break through, like another mm-hmm. like wall to uh-huh, like uh-huh. bond uh-huh. a little bit. So it feels very personal, yeah. very deep.
Not every single time, but I think it there is some overlap. I think I'm trying to do the same thing with supervisees related to expressing diversity, equality, and inclusion.
Mm, right.
That
to get them to think in those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, asking them to recognize their experience in a session mm-hmm. and how to put it into words and how to feel comfortable. So I think every supervisee that I've worked with and thinking about that, they're at different levels.
Right.
They're levels of feeling comfortable mm-hmm. talking about that. So some know the words they want to use for themselves, and they're working on then how to say it in their counselor
right.
role.
Right.
And then there are other supervisees who aren't quite yet comfortable saying it at all.
Okay.
And that's the point they're starting yeah. at. So everybody's starting at a different point, but it feels mm-hmm. new and right. weird.
I don't know why my brain just went here, but I'll share. First time going to, how long did it take you to transition to using like a scheduler, like on a computer or a phone versus a paper calendar? And Sarah's a lot younger than I am. So
I don't know.
Okay. I mm-hmm. super struggled with that.
Yeah.
I literally kept two calendars for almost an entire year.
Oh, wow.
I could not trust that my yeah. phone calendar mm-hmm. was going to be adequate.
I think I had, I don't even know what it was called, but my dad gave it to me as a present.
Was it a Palm Pilot?
Something like
okay,
that.
Yeah.
And it had a cute little case right. that he got for me that yeah. I liked. And before that, I had a paper calendar.
So you transitioned very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, and certainly now my calendar is at a whole different level of complicated.
Right.
It's and different. So maybe that was it. That yeah. Back that at that point, I wasn't managing quite as many things right. as I do now.
Right. Yeah, it took me a whole year. I just didn't trust it. It's like, something's going to happen. I'm going to yeah. lose all of this.
Well, what about, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I think I did. Well, I mean, maybe the same. Maybe calendar and my address book.
Okay, address book right? guy. He's
up there. That at some point, I had both a paper calendar and a paper address book, mm-hmm. and it transitioned.
Right.
And I know that
this book was easier for me.
lots of people have a hard time with that
right,
one.
Right.
What if I lose this list of phone numbers, those people are just gone.
Right.
And that can be scary. Mm-hmm. So changing mm-hmm. that. What about, we've talked about it before, that you at one point had a stack of paper.
Yes. A lot of stack of paper.
Right. That with all of your notes and all uh-huh. your records, you know, transitioning right. that. But I think when you've talked about that, that felt almost liberating.
Yes, it was like a relief. Once I yeah. could lose it, it was like, oh, this is what life could be like. Mm-hmm.
But I have heard other people go, oh, no.
Right.
If I didn't write it down, right. or if I can't refer back to it in hard copy, mm-hmm. what will I do? So that's weird too.
Right. It was, yeah, it was hard. I have a supervisee right now that is doing, so at her office, at her location she's assigned to, she has to use certain forms. Mm-hmm. And so they have to be in this documented form. Mm-hmm. But she actually is ending up doing a lot of reflection of her own because she's realizing those forms get her nowhere. She's not growing. Yes. And so yes. she's practicing now identifying some yeah. stuff outside of session
right.
for her own process.
I haven't seen that in supervisees that started off in maybe an agency and either switch to a different agency or start a practice mm-hmm. or enter a practice. And they want to take the old forms with them.
They're like, I need
right.
these.
Even a paper or electronic right. version, they right. really are dedicated to the question or the order of the questions mm-hmm. and getting them to see beyond that.
Yeah.
That, well, I mean, if you wanted to, you could change that. How could you improve on this? Mm-hmm. Or if you're not stuck to this format right. anymore,
what else do you need on mm-hmm. this? What maybe, would you add?
Maybe form? When you use this form, you actually always included that, hand wrote this question in or just mm-hmm. added it in, typed it in your notes when you, mm-hmm. what's that question? Maybe you've decided that that's a valuable question and you want to right. add it.
It's liberating.
But maybe that's the conclusion of all of this, that all of that comes through practice. Practice
yes.
can be boring. Practice mm-hmm. is an important skill, but practice is also what's helping us to be better and better.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for listening today to Supervision with a Vision.